Hey, everybody. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Mike Malloy Show. Hope you had a great day, huh? If you live in the middle Atlantic states, you are getting a real blast of what we got here in Georgia 2 days ago. Global climate change? What global climate change? It's nonsense, right? All kinds of things happening that induces complete madness. Have you noticed that? I was thinking the other day, why not just kick back and let go and go crazy? Why resist? Resistance is futile. I mean, why resist? Do you remember back in the day when, when you used to get high? I know you did, so don't sit there and go, oh, listen to him, and on the radio, no less. You remember back in the day when you used to get high, and I'm talking about mild stuff now. I'm not talking about real serious stuff like alcohol. I'm talking about reefer. And you smoke a joint, and especially back when it wasn't as powerful as it is now, but neither were you, for that matter. And you'd smoke a little bit, and all of a sudden, boom, and you'd slip into that stone consciousness, and this big dichotomy would set up, like, oh, wow, man, this is great. Oh, God, this is awful. Remember that? You didn't know what to do. And a little boy, and when you finally got, the paranoia would just rage through you. And finally, when you were unstoned, you would tell a friend about it. No, man, I don't ever want to do that again. Your friend would say, no, man, just go with it. Just go ahead. Be crazy. You ever feel that way now? Without the reefer, because none of us do drugs anymore. Those of us over a certain age, we just don't do it anymore. Reality is for us. Reality is for people that can't tolerate drugs. So here we are. In light of that, this kind of madness on the one hand, and on the other hand, oh, what the hell, why not just go with it? As expected, Vietnam Airlines has signed up for four A380s. Those are the new Airbus. Are those ours? Do we make the A380s? Or are those from France? I don't know. Anyway, the new Airbus, A380s, first customer for these things since 2006. And Ken in Hammett, California sent this to me. It just had a comment. He writes, it's good we wasted 211,454 American heroes to save Vietnam from communism. Now that 211,000, of course, 58,000 are dead. The rest were the wounded, the severely wounded. And his number's low because it doesn't count all the men who are now in their 60s. Can you believe that? Men who are in their 60s and late 50s who are Vietnam veterans are suffering from PTSD. But the waste of American lives to save Vietnam from communism. Now, you got to be over a certain age to appreciate in a very macabre way what I'm talking about. That was a story we were told back in the mid-60s, early 60s too, by the leaders of this country. You know the story. If you've seen or read anything about Robert McNamara and about Nixon and about Johnson, and also why Kennedy was assassinated, because Kennedy's plan was to pull all troops out of Vietnam by the end of 65. It was over. And military-industrial complex set in a pig's ass and killed him, which is probably one of the reasons that Obama is having some problems here with what to do about Afghanistan. But the whole reason we were there, you see, and this was spoon-fed to us by everybody, even Uncle Walter Cronkite, by everybody. A few people came out of the ether. Mitt Romney's father, George Romney, who was the governor of Michigan and ran for president in 68, I believe. He was in the ran the Republican primary, 64 or 68, I think it was 68. And George Romney made a trip. This Republican made a trip to Vietnam. And when he came back, called a press conference, And he said, I've been brainwashed about what's really going on over there. Brainwashed by the American government, which was at that time, of course, run by LBJ, and the American media. George Romney said, you know, I've been brainwashed. Now, I'm paraphrasing. He said, you know, well, no, I'm not. I'm not either. You know, he said, I've been brainwashed by my own government, my own media. That part I'm kind of paraphrasing. But what Romney saw was what the Vietnam War was, a civil war, a war of nationalism. And he also saw what a lot of people see in Afghanistan, that the Vietnamese people had made a decision. And there were enough of them that if their casualties were to be, instead of 2 or 3 million, up around 8 or 10 million, they would have continued to fight because they had made a decision. No foreign people are going to be in our country. No foreign troops will be on our soil. Period. And having made that decision, they kicked the ass of the greatest imperial power with the most firepower on earth. Us. Now, you listen to a lot of people say, no. That's not what we lost because media kept taking those goddamn films of soldiers and playing them at dinner hour. And, you know, people wouldn't support us. And true. Blah, blah. That's all lies. That's what people say when they can't accept the fact that we got our asses kicked because the fighters on the side of Vietnam were more dedicated and willing to sacrifice more than we were. Period. And plus, that's B. A, it was their country. So here we are. Vietnam Airlines has signed up for 4 A380s. Thank God we sent all those people to die to stop communism, right? They did a goddamn good job. Oh, wait. The communists won. But are they still communists? So, and were they ever communists? They were Ho Chi Minh? Oh, yeah, sure, okay. He spent a lot of time learning Russian communism. But wasn't Uncle Ho more of a nationalist than he was a communist? He didn't give a damn about all that international crap. Vietnam for Vietnamese. Afghanistan for Afghans. Period. I saw some disturbing video tonight. I say disturbing because it shows what's going to happen in our new Vietnam. Video taken by Afghan troops, or Afghan fighters, who had attacked an American outpost. And I believe this is a couple of months ago, killed nine Americans. And the tactics that they used, and then listening to them after they had overrun this outpost or defeated the American Marines at this outpost until they had to withdraw. And the statements were very similar to what the Vietnamese had said. The translation from Pashtun or whatever language was being spoken, but the translation was, this is our country. We will fight until every last foreign fighter is out of our country. Period. I mean, what is so weird about that? And is the Taliban a bunch of psychopathic religious nutcases? Yeah, but that exists in Israel. It exists in the United States. It exists, you know, psychopathic religious nutcases. It exists in Iran. They're all over the place. So what? That's just the way it goes. As long as we have religion, we have psychopathic religious nutcases, right? So here we are with Afghanistan. And maybe Obama gets it. I don't know. But we will never, ever defeat the Afghan fighters. Just like we would never, ever defeat the Vietnamese.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Here's an example of what I'm talking about back in the day when you go, oh, wow, that's pretty good. Oh, God. You know? Here's another example. Politico.com has this post at their website written by Meredith Shiner and Jonathan Allen. The Republican... No, listen. Republican National Committee's own health insurance plan that they use for all their employees covers elective abortion. Now, the Republican Party's platform calls abortion, quote, fundamental assault on innocent human life, end quote. Well, then, according to Politico, Federal Election Commission records show the RNC purchases its insurance from Cigna. Two sales agents for the company said that the RNC's policy covers elective abortion. Informed of the coverage, a spokesman for the Republican National Committee told Politico that the policy predates the tenure of current RNC chairman Michael Steele. The spokeswoman said, quote, the current policy has been in effect since 1991. Well, my goodness, that's 18 years, isn't it? She went on to say, and we're taking steps to address the issue. The RNC moved quickly to assuage any concerns that its members might have. In a letter obtained by Politico, RNC Chief of Staff Ken McKay writes to the 168 committee men and committee women across the country that Chairman Steele, quote, takes this issue very seriously, end quote. See? You see what I mean? Huh? Now, is this something that just happened? No. For almost 20 years. Well, of course. It's a goddamn insurance policy. That's all. It's medical. It's medical insurance. That's all it is, right? It doesn't say in the policy, and by God, you have to get an abortion. No. The RNC Chief of Staff, Ken McKay, says that the RNC has been evaluating its health insurance policy and will continue to do so. What the hell does that mean? Now, remember, leading up to the passage of the House bill last week, 176 House Republicans and 64 Democrats voted for the so-called STUPAC Amendment, a measure that prohibits federal funds from being used to buy health insurance that covers elective abortions, which is misleading because there are no federal funds that would go into the so-called insurance exchange. This is where it gets all murky, and the dumbasses in this country go, I want my money being used. Your money won't be used. The way it was set up before this crazy-ass STUPAC amendment was that this crazy-ass insurance exchange, which makes no sense whatsoever, would be like a pool of insurance companies waiting for you to come by and say, what do you got? Well, what do you got? What do you got over there? What do you got here? The exchange itself would be paid for by the government, but the people buying it would be doing it with their money, with a private company. But this crazy son of a bitch from Michigan, STUPAC, with the backing of the monolithic Catholic Church, said, oh, no, this is America. We're a Christian country. You can't buy private insurance with your private money. And 176 House Republicans, those squealy little bastards who are always talking about government intrusion, they voted, that's right, that's right, that's right. Private insurance, private money. Oh, no, oh, no. According to several Cigna employees, the insurance company offers its customers the opportunity to opt out of abortion coverage, and the Republican National Committee did not choose to opt out. Now, remember, this policy has been in effect 18 years. At any time during all the Republican Party's finger-pointing and screeching and screaming about abortion, They could have said, oh, and by the way, we switched insurance companies because we don't want abortion coverage. And the rat bastards never said a word, did they? Of course not. Why should they? Of course they want abortion coverage. I mean, my God. Cigna spokesman Chris Curran declined to discuss the specifics of the RNC's plan, saying it's against company policy to reveal even the identities of its insured. But he said that Cigna's products, quote, are designed to meet the requirements of our individual employer clients. Employer clients are informed of the services covered, and it is their choice to decide which benefits meet their needs, end quote. You know what that means, of course. No matter how much squealing the RNC makes about, oh, we didn't know, they are lying bastards. Of course they knew.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Yes, we try to keep it flying monkey free, but you know, the best laid plans of mice and men. Continuing with the idea of resist, don't resist. Remember the Kentucky census worker that was found hanged from a tree with the word fed scrawled on his chest? The most recent update, this was, when was this? This was back in, September, early September, over 2 months ago. Well, they're still investigating, of course, and now the word coming out of Kentucky law enforcement is that, well, we're still looking at the possibility he committed suicide. Two officials in that state speaking on condition of anonymity said no final conclusions had been made, but they're growing skeptical that 51-year-old Bill Sparkman died at the hands of someone angry at the federal government. Why? Well, according to these officials who speak on conditions of anonymity, there were no defensive wounds on Sparkman's body. Bill Sparkman, 51-year-old Bill Sparkman. His hands were bound with duct tape. But the police say they were still somewhat mobile, his hands, suggesting he could have manipulated the rope. Sparkman's adopted son has been adamant that the case is murder. He's not alone in that opinion. Jerry Weaver, one of the people who found the body during a gathering at a family cemetery, he remains certain the death was a homicide. Jerry Weaver told the AP this week that he recalled Sparkman's hands being bound tightly. Weaver also said the rope, which he described as thin like a clothesline, was wrapped around the high branches of two different trees as if for leverage. Sparkman's truck was found nearby. Sparkman's clothes in the bed of the truck and a census worker placard sitting on the dashboard. Jerry Weaver had previously told the AP that the body was naked, bound at the feet and hands, and gagged. There was also an identification tag taped to the side of his neck. Jerry Weaver said he was put on display. As far as the suicide, a friend of Bill Sparkman said he seemed as chipper as ever in the days before his death. This friend, a retired Kentucky state trooper, who directs an after-school program at the elementary school where Mr. Sparkman was a frequent substitute teacher. The retired Kentucky State Trooper said he spoke with Sparkman 2 or 3 days before he died, saw no signs he was upset about anything. Bound, gagged, and hanged, but he committed suicide.
Oh, okay.
Notice how quickly that story disappeared? Email from PM. Mike, you don't remember me, but I'm a podcast subscriber in Seattle area. I started the, hopefully, nationwide nonstop F. Lou Dobbs party today. Party, you know, just partying. With my 3 Mexican workers that helped me fix my house, and I conveniently don't ask them any legal status questions like effing Republican birther Lou Dobbs told me to do. But we have a hoot at Home Depot and getting lunch at Wendy's. Can you give a shout out to keep the party going in celebration of this racist pig leaving CNN? Here's your shout out. Keep it lit, buddy, and he writes, and you have the biggest blanks. Well, there you go, PM, your shout out. Yeah, what's to say about Lou Dobbs leaving? I think CNN just got tired of this jerk. You know, he'll wind up on Fox, like John Stossel is on Fox, and you know, they all wind up on Fox. Fox is like a you know, when you flush your commode and the water starts to swirl round and round and round until eventually everything is just carried away, right? That's what's going on with television media, talk television. Fox is the sewer, the toilet bowl, and all of these, now don't worry, I'm not going to say anything bad. All of these television halfwits like John Stossel and Glenn Beck and Lou Dobbs, now they all wind up there. Round and round and round. And crazy Sarah Palin, right? She gave Robert sent this to me. She gave a speech in Milwaukee last week. It's closed to the media and pretty much any electronic device. This is all over the web, by the way. They were wanding people with metal detectors on the way in, apparently rooting out cameras and cell phones and everything. This is what Nazis do. This is Sarah Palin. Jesus Christ, how can anyone take this woman seriously? I think the only reason men go to see her is because she's hot. She really is. She's very, very, you know, and she's got that Republican kind of psycho woman attitude that white male Republicans love. It's the dichotomy again. Is she going to have sex with me or is she going to bob at me? Oh, the dichotomy once again. Anyway, Robert got a video camera in and he got the audio of her, of her blank, blank, crazy rambling about that In God We Trust story being moved to the new dollar, on the new dollar coins. I don't know anything about that. I frankly don't care. I've always wondered why anything that is government produced or sponsored or owned or whatever has any reference to any kind of a deity. That's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy. But anyway. And apparently she's making a big deal about it, only the problem is it was the Bush administration that ordered it moved on the new dollar coins. Dumb bitch. The hoe from Wasilla rides again. Yeehaw! I want to see a Dobbs Wasilla ticket in 2012. That's what I want to see. Lou Dobbs and the hoe from Wasilla. Okay, some serious stuff. Federal prosecutors took steps today to seize, this is under the heading of, federal prosecutors took steps today to seize 4 U.S. mosques and a Fifth Avenue, New York, Manhattan, Midtown skyscraper, all owned by a nonprofit Muslim, or that was owned, the skyscraper owned by a nonprofit Muslim organization. Now get this, long suspected of being secretly controlled by the Iranian government. Doom, 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 doom. As the AP reports it in what could prove to be one of the biggest counterterrorism seizures in U.S. history, prosecutors filed a civil complaint in federal court against the Alavi Foundation, seeking the forfeiture of more than $500 million in assets. The assets include bank accounts, Islamic centers consisting of schools and mosques in New York City, Maryland, California, and Houston, more than 100 acres in Virginia, and a 36-story glass office tower in New York. It is extremely rare for U.S. law enforcement to seize a house of worship, right? Because of, you know, all that nonsense about the First Amendment right to freedom of religion. But this is the age of terrorism. AP goes on, the action against the Shiite Muslim mosques is sure to inflame relations between U.S. government and American Muslims, many of whom were fearful of a backlash after last week's Fort Hood shooting rampage, blamed on a Muslim-American major. Muslim-American. Are we going to start saying Jewish-American now? Christian-American? Mormon-American? Hindu-American? Hey, what are you? I'm a peyote American. You are? What are you? I'm a snake handler American. Oh, okay. Okay. So this guy is now identified, this murderer in Fort Hood, as a Muslim American. Okay. Ibrahim Hooper, who is a spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations, said, quote, whatever the details of the government's case against the owners of the mosques, as a civil rights organization, we are concerned that the seizure of American houses of worship could have a chilling effect on the religious freedom of citizens of all faiths and may send a negative message to Muslims worldwide, end quote. You think it just might send a negative message to Muslims worldwide? They are seizing mosques now? Okay, what are the charges? First of all, the U.S. Attorney's Office said no action has been taken against any tenants or occupants of these properties. The tenants and occupants remain free to use properties as they have before today's filing. There is no allegation of any wrongdoing on the part of any of these tenants or occupants. So what's the deal? What is being charged? Why are mosques and schools and property and a skyscraper and, well, I wouldn't call a 35-story building a skyscraper, but you know, it's all being seized. Stuff owned by Alavi Foundation. So what's going on here? We'll find out in a minute.
We smoked the last 1 hour ago. So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine. And the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. So what would prompt federal prosecutors here in the U.S. to seize four U.S. mosques, a Fifth Avenue 35-story building, 100 acres in Virginia, Islamic centers consisting of schools in New York, Maryland, California, and Houston, bank accounts? What prompted that? Well, there's something called the Alavi, A-L-A-V-I, Alavi Foundation. Prosecutors said the Alavi Foundation managed the office tower on behalf of the Iranian government and working with a front company known as Azza Corporation, illegally funneled millions in rental income to Iran's state-owned bank, Meli. Bank Meli has been accused by a U.S. Treasury official of providing support for Iran's nuclear program. Boom, 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 boom. According to the AP, the U.S. has long suspected that the Alavi Foundation was an arm of the Iranian government. A 97-page complaint details involvement in foundation business by several top Iranian officials. Oh, no. There were no raids today as part of the forfeiture action. The government is simply required to post notices of the civil complaint on the property. This is a civil complaint now. It's not a criminal complaint. You understand? Parents who had children in these schools lined up in their cars to pick up the kids at the Islamic Education Center of Greater Houston, the Islamic Education Center in Rockville, Maryland. Hi, kids. Come on, jump in the car. Why, Mama? Well, the building has been seized. Why, Mama? Because there's a bank that sends money to Iran. Oh, God forbid. The Alavi Foundation, by the way, is the successor organization to the Pahlavi Foundation. That was another group that was worked to advance Iran's interests in America. But that one was owned by the Shah of Iran, the secular yet militaristic right-wing Shah that we installed as the head of Iran in 1953 after we engineered the overthrow of the elected government of Iran. We brought the Shah out of retirement somewhere. Well, he was a youngster then. I think he was in his 20s, somewhere in Europe, and installed him. We said, here, Iran, here's your new leader. And, of course, the Shah used to love to run around in military garb. I guess he was a pilot, fighter pilot, and all this kind of stuff. And he had that big-ass party, the 2000th anniversary of the Persian founding, the Persian Empire, and yada, 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 back in the 70s, I think. And then he got cancer, and then the revolution came, and he fled to, he wanted to come here and have the surgery. I guess he didn't. I had a big discussion, online discussion with some people about this, I don't know, a couple of months ago. But anyway, the Shah died, and Ayatollah Khomeini led the revolution, and the rest, as they say, is history. But as long as our boy was running the Pahlavi Institute in the United States that funneled money to Iranian banks, it was okay. No problem. I mean, damn. And he was our boy as long as he maintained enough money to go to Sabak, the Iranian secret police that we assisted in setting up to make sure that any dissidents in Iran, be they religious or secular, would be questioned and convinced to change their evil ways and then murdered. So the Pahlavi Foundation, bad. The Alavi Foundation, good. Oh, yeah, authorities say the agenda of the Alavi Foundation changed from the agenda of the Pahlavi Foundation after the fall of the Shah. The fall of the Shah. The Iranian people had enough of the murderous son of a bitch and threw him out and was replaced by a crazy religious freak, Ayatollah Khomeini. Kind of like Pat Robertson, or who's the dead one? Falwell. So, it's crazy, see? I mean, do you go with it? Do you resist? Do you see the crazed humor in all this? I mean, we sit here night after night for the past two decades, not in this particular place, but, you know, railing and wailing and turning blue and about all of these injustices and all this crap and all this garbage. And on December 21st, 2012, it's all going to end anyway, so what's the point? You know, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Maybe. So, what do you do? Can you remember back the first time you smoked a joint? I remember a lot of people in my cohort, the first time they smoked a joint, they went, oh, that's nothing. And other people would start screaming, you know, just from a couple of hits on a pipe or a bong or a joint, right? You remember that. You had friends who went, oh, no, oh, no, I went to open the door and the doorknob turned into a fountain of blood. Aha! And then you had people that said things like, wow, man, did you know that, if you stare at the fingernail on your little finger, you can see the whole universe. So, dichotomies abide. We'll be back. We've got some interesting story here about the Catholic Archdiocese of Washington that's into blackmail now. You know, how long have they been into child rape, and now they're into blackmail? And also, I think we have a report card tonight from Kate Petrini and a report from Prairie 2. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Isn't this fun? Moody Blues song. All right, where were we? I'll tell you what, let's do Prairie 2's contribution to the program tonight. He writes, initial jobless claims have declined slightly, but still nowhere near the level where new jobs could be created. States and municipalities continue to pressure workers into pay cuts and bigger workloads as they eliminate jobs. The same tactics are being used on white-collar workers, and the unions continue to accept pay cuts. The most insidious practice is the two-tier system that is relentlessly replacing middle-class jobs with the working poor as union workers retire or take buyouts. No job below the level of the predatory class at the top is exempt from this pushdown of wages. Service workers like healthcare are under increasing pressure to accept lower pay as millions leave the middle-class jobs forever. The flat-earthers who make billions and pay right-wing mouthpieces millions to tell us that American workers make too much money. A few years ago, they told us that we could give up manufacturing because it would raise our standard of living. Now they are telling us we need to compete with a part of the world that lives on $5 a day. Guess what? They tell those people they need to compete with people who live on a dollar a day. The really terrifying aspect of this kind of race to the bottom is that at some point you reach the bottom and then things get really bad. Prairie 2. Partly in reference to what we were talking about last night, that site, New York Times Online, where these writers suggested that American workers are overpaid and we need to get with the program because workers around the world are not paid the way we are. And that's never coming back. This is the thing that's really scary to me. And I've been talking about this for 5 or 6 years because you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize there's a missile heading your way. We've been talking about this a long time, that the depression of wages was the primary goal. Don't forget that labor costs to capitalists is the one thing that drives them goddamn crazy. It just makes them crazy. You know, they can steal natural resources. They can send the army in if there's any resistance to get those resources. The capitalists, by definition, control the financial markets, obviously. You don't find socialists running, the predatory lending agencies and Goldman Sachs and places like that, right? So, and they can drive down or drive up the cost of everything, depending on how they want everything to play. What are we going to do about real estate? Oh, drive it up, man. I've got 1,000 acres I want to unload. Done! What are we going to do about real estate? Oh, drive it down, man. I want to buy a whole bunch of real estate. Done! The one thing that they haven't been able to totally master, they're almost there, is labor costs. That's what the whole globalization is about. Notice it's globalization, not unionization, not fair trade, but free trade. Free to whom? Free to the predatory class. Free to the capitalists. Now, you're not getting an education here because you all knew all this. You know all this. But for the past 5, 6, 10, I don't know how long it's been, years, you know, sitting on the rim like I have been, the rim of talk radio, and because I've never really been mainstream talk radio, but sitting on the rim and doing my research and getting stuff from contributors to this program, it was not difficult to figure out what was going on. When Bill Clinton was talking about globalization, it was going to be the savior of the American workforce. It was just like, what in the hell are you talking about? I mean, even I got that before somebody like Prairie 2 or Paul Krugman had to explain it to me. What are you talking about? NAFTA? We are going to incorporate into our workforce, which is the way it turned out, millions upon millions of workers who are used to earning a tenth, a twentieth of what the American worker gets. What do you think the manufacturer, what do you think the capitalists, what do you think the lenders are going to do with that good news? It's just like this healthcare reform nonsense, health insurance reform nonsense that is about to crash and burn, and I will be one of the first to toss a match into the gasoline-soaked heap of garbage that the health insurance reform bill has degenerated into. Poorly constructed sentence there, but you understand what I'm talking about, right? Because all of a sudden, you've got maybe another 30 million Americans who are going to be forced to buy health insurance. You know, the health insurance industry is just sitting in the corner going, la dee 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 dee. Oh, goddamn, I can't wait. Boop, 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 boop. Meanwhile, the teabagger nutballs are all going, I don't want it. The insurance industry is sitting back there going, beep, 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 beep. Can't wait to do, dee 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 dee. Go ahead, do it, do it, do it. Give us 30 million new customers. And not the kind of customers that we have to sell. The kind of customers that have to buy. but they don't have a choice. This is great. The insurance agencies and companies are going, son of a bitch, you mean this law says that if they don't buy my insurance, they have to pay a fine? Oh, my God. Open the gates. This is health insurance reform, USA, circa 2009. So, who was it? David Sirota today. Who was it that is just happy as a mudlark on the Stupak amendment because it's going to kill this, it's going to end it, and maybe someday in the future we will have another Democrat who will make an effort to reform health insurance in this country, health care in this country, all of it. And what that Democrat will do, because it damn sure is not going to be a Republican. It's David Lindorf writing at Buzzflash. Well, I got it from Buzzflash. But what will happen the next time, maybe, what should have happened this time, that Barack Obama and his crew should have just stood up and said, okay, we've got the model. It's Medicare. We're going for Medicare for everybody. End of story. But for whatever reason, obviously, that didn't happen. But I digress. How did I start out this rant? What the hell was I talking about, Kathy? Huh? Smoking pot? No. No, what was I talking about? Oh, my God.
Which is probably why you can't remember what you were
talking about. That's true. That's very true. I'll think of it. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've seen the nations rise and fall. I've heard their stories, heard them all. But love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold. It's over, it ain't going any further.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, okay. Might as well talk a bit about this phony health insurance reform thing that is, I hope it dies at this point. I really do. And I say that knowing that, we could be without health insurance by the end of next year. Affordable health insurance. The blog of Buzzflash that Dave Lindorf writes, he thanked Bart Stupak, the Democrat from Michigan, for what Dave calls your outrageous amendment to the House version of the health insurance reform legislation in Congress, which bars any insurance company that proposed health insurance exchange from offering a health insurance plan that includes abortion coverage. And as Lindorf says, this amendment would actually bar women or families from buying, even with their own money, and no government subsidy, health insurance that includes funding for medically recommended abortion. But, Lindorf points out the obvious stuff that you know and I know. He writes that way back in 1965, a different Democratic president, Democratic Congress, passed landmark health reform that gave the United States a pioneering single-payer health care program, with the only problem being that you had to live to 65 in order to qualify for that. And today, that program, Medicare, while repeatedly shortchanged and underfunded by Congress, is relied upon by over 40 million elderly and disabled Americans, and is widely appreciated for its simplicity and its universality. Sure, it could be better. Yadda, yadda, yadda. But it remains a beautiful model of what could be done for the rest of the country. And instead of drawing on this time-tested model, President Obama and the Democrats in Congress have pretended Medicare doesn't exist. Obama went so far as to say on several occasions that while single-payer plans such as those in Canada and France might work well in those countries, introducing such a system here would mean, quote, starting from scratch, end quote. Starting from scratch? Hello? Hey, Mr. President. You're not serious, are you? As Lindorf says, Medicare would have been, Medicare for All would have been the proper way to reform American health care. And in fact, it could have been implemented right away. At a huge overall savings to all of us. This was never admitted by the Democratic leaders in Congress or by the president. In fact, bills in the House and Senate, sponsored respectively by John Conyers of Michigan and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, have never been even allowed to get a hearing or go to a floor vote for fear the public would see what we are being denied. Medicare for All. It certainly would have meant higher payroll taxes for all of us, but it would have been a huge net savings because it would have eliminated the need for Medicaid. That's $450 billion a year right there. The Veterans Administration healthcare system, another $100 billion. Publicly funded charity care by hospitals, another $300 billion. It would have eliminated over $150 billion a year in private health industry administrative costs and between $75 and $100 billion in health industry profits. Added up, that's savings of over $1 trillion a year. So adding the under 65 population to Medicare would only add about $800 billion a year to the program cost. There's a net savings of $200 billion a year without even counting the fact that businesses and citizens alike would no longer have to pay ransoms to the private insurance industry. A savings to individuals and employers of close to $1.5 trillion a year. Jesus God. So again, thank you, Representative Stupak. And all you anti-women's rights Democrats who backed the amendment barring abortion coverage in the health reform legislation, you've given us another shot at real health system reform. Someday. It's astonishing. So there we are with the dichotomy again. God, I really want access to health insurance. I really, really do. But I'm going to be forced to buy from a predatory, filthy, corrupt, stinking industry in order to not be fined. And this is called health insurance reform? What? Now, see, rather than address that, these dumb goddamn Republicans talk about death panels!
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Or something like that. 25 before the hour. It is time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for Kay Petrini's report card.
As their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams.
Kay Petrini teaches in San Francisco. Hi, Mike. After watching that appalling display of stupidity last Thursday, I decided to use some of it in my classroom to make a point. She's referring to the Michelle Bachmann rally. I'm sure that most of my students will remain apathetic, but I think this may have gotten through to at least a few of them. There are a lot of gasps, especially about the placards, the ones referencing Dachau. And the best part was I didn't have to say a word. The clips spoke for themselves very clearly. Anyway, I decided that since Bachmann's so-called press conference was such a great teaching tool on what ignorance and hatred really look like, I'd write to thank her. Dear Congresswoman Bachmann, I'm writing to thank you for organizing your, quote, press conference, end quote, in Washington on Thursday, November 5th. By way of background, I'm a high school teacher of social science, which includes world history, U.S. history, and U.S. government. Last week in the classroom was very difficult, as I struggled to convey to my students the importance of learning about their own history and current events. These young people are on the verge of adulthood, so issues like the war in Afghanistan and access to health care will have an immediate impact on them. Sadly, it seems that they are increasingly apathetic about these and other critical issues, so I've been searching for lessons that might shake them out of their stupor. Last Friday, I was able to do just that, thanks to you. In U.S. government, we are just wrapping up a clip, or a unit on Congress, and in U.S. history, our current topic is the Constitution. Before I showed students some clips from your press conference, I made sure to explain that two of the featured representatives are part of the House leadership, House Minority Leader John Boehner and Minority Whip Eric Cantor. I also emphasized the great distinction associated with those positions. I'm going to share with you, Ms. Bachmann, what my students saw and the lessons they took away from it in their own words. One, the whites of their eyes. Students were shown the segment from Fox News in which you discussed your upcoming press conference. In that clip, you said, quote, "The only way they're going to listen is if real freedom-loving Americans come here to Washington on Thursday, look at the whites of their eyes, of their members of Congress, and say, 'Don't you remember? I told you don't take away my health care.'" Student reaction: isn't that what the colonel at Bunker Hill said when the army was running out of ammunition? Wasn't that about waiting until they knew they could hit the target? Isn't she kind of saying that if our members of Congress don't listen, we should shoot them? Didn't she ever see Schoolhouse Rock? One of those skits prominently features the whites of their eyes comment. Lesson demonstrated: Americans look ridiculous when they spout quotations without regard to historical context. They look even more pathetic when they do so as an elected member of Congress. Two, the Constitution. First, students researched the leadership of Congress. Who's the Speaker of the House? What does she do? What is the job of the party whips? Next, they watched the clip of House Minority Leader John Boehner holding up a booklet and saying, "This is my copy of the Constitution. I'm going to stand here with our founding fathers who wrote in the preamble, 'We hold these truths to be self-evident.'" Student reaction: hey, wait a minute. Isn't that from the Declaration of Independence? What's this guy's job again? Isn't he one of the leaders in the House of Representatives? How can he not know what's in those documents? He's a congressman. Lesson demonstrated: it's embarrassing enough that most American citizens do not know the basics of their own history and government, but when an elected official in a prominent position screws up like this, it's humiliating. Supplemental student commentary: maybe we ought to learn some of this stuff, because otherwise we're going to look dumb too. Just say no. Students watched the portion of the press conference featuring House Minority Whip Eric Cantor railing against health care. "I will guarantee you that we are committed to making sure that not one Republican will vote for this bill." Student reaction: don't most Americans want a change in health care? why would he make such a big deal out of voting against something? Does he have a better idea? He seems really pissed off. What's his problem? Lesson demonstrated. This obstructionism demonstrates a complete disconnect with the American people, and the absence of an alternative demonstrates the principle of all talk, no action. 4. What kind of socialism? Students noticed signs being carried by people in the crowd. One prominently featured the slogan, "The National Socialist Healthcare, Germany, 1945, above a photo of corpses at Dachau. Student response. Well, the student response was very vocal, probably because these kids attend a Holocaust survival speakers series each year. As a result, they're well-versed in the history of the Holocaust. Other comments included, "In that movie we saw last year, Europa, Europa, didn't the boy go back and forth between the Nazis and the communists who were at war with each other? Weren't the Nazis fascists, so how can a fascist also be a communist? That doesn't even make any sense. Didn't the fascists and the communists hate each other?" Lesson demonstrated. Socialism is a multifaceted word. Both national socialism, which is fascism, and Soviet socialism, which is communism, were totalitarian systems. So when people attempt to label today's socially democratic European governments as that kind of socialism, they are lying. Or they are totally ignorant. So, Ms. Bachman, as you can see, my students were able to learn a great deal from your press conference. They learned it on their own just by observing what you put right in front of them and then critically thinking about it. Again, I want to thank you for imparting such important lessons to them. Thanks to the instructive display put on by you and your colleagues on Capitol Hill last week, I think I may have finally gotten through to at least some of these kids about the consequences of ignorance and apathy. I look forward to future press conferences and other media appearances by you and your venerable colleagues because they are such a wonderful teaching tool. Sincerely yours, Kay Petrini.
On your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh. And know
Kay's report card. Brought to you by your friends at Government Schools. All right. You want a good example of blackmail? You know, the Catholic Church has been involved in all sorts of things, from cultural genocide to actual genocide to lying, stealing, mass murder, authoritarianism, totalitarianism. I mean, the list of crimes committed by the Catholic Church is endless. The crimes are legion. We all know that. And yet a lot of people maintain their Catholic faith. I guess that's another example of what we're talking about tonight, that dichotomy. How do you do that? How do you do that? Knowing, if you're a Catholic, knowing that the Church, capitals, the Church is responsible, arguably, and just arguably, for more death on this planet than any other institution. More so than Maoist China, Soviet communism, American imperialism. It's the Catholic Church. And yet, it's supposed to be the home of Jesus. So I don't know how Catholics do that. I don't. You all have my deepest, without being condescending, pity. Because it must be hell. Since the Catholic Church hierarchy obviously believes it's okay to sexually abuse young men and young girls, since they believe that, why, and this is a stretch, why would they be against same-sex marriage? I mean, if it's okay for the princes and the pawns of the church, or the knights and the bishops of the church, to have sex with boy or girl at any time and place of their choosing, usually somewhere in the church, always with the threat of eternal damnation if the child refuses, what's wrong with allowing consenting adults to get married? Why is the church so against that? Tim Craig and Michelle Borstein, writing in the Washington Post, have something to say about it, and I'm going to share that with you when we come back. And what you will get, as Kay Petrini was giving or getting or sharing object lessons with Michelle Bachman, we will share, you and I, the underpinnings of blackmail.
You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came.
So you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. When I was a kid growing up, most of my playmates, and I had a lot of them, were Catholic. They came from Catholic families. I wouldn't say they were Catholic. We were just kids. And there were a few Jews and a smattering of Protestants, but mostly Catholics. And so I got full frontal exposure to the Catholic rituals and the Catholic Church and all that stuff at a very young age. One of the things that I was always impressed with were organizations like Catholic Charities. As a matter of fact, it was watching how the church, the Catholic Church, worked that made me think when I was a kid, you know, that, hey, you know, these people, while I didn't feel any compulsion to share the belief system, I still felt like, hey, these people do good work. You know, I hadn't heard about the not good work yet. But Catholic Charities was, because I grew up before there was welfare, what we had was relief. But I've already told you about that. Well, the Catholic Archdiocese of Washington said yesterday that it will be unable to continue the social service programs it runs for the District of Columbia if the city doesn't change a proposed same-sex marriage law. The threat by the church could affect tens of thousands of people that turn to the Catholic Church for help with adoption, homelessness, and health care. Under the bill, this is what has the church's robes in a wad. The bill, headed for a D.C. council vote next month, under this bill, religious organizations would not be required to perform or make space available for same-sex weddings, but they would have to obey city laws prohibiting discrimination against gay men and lesbians. That's all. What was that bit? Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Render unto God what is God's. Something like that. Oh, well. Fearful that they could be forced, among other things, to extend employee benefits to same-sex married couples, church officials said they would have no choice but to abandon thousands of people who have done nothing. This is called collateral damage. Several D.C. council members said the Catholic Church is trying to erode the city's long-standing laws protecting gay men and lesbians from discrimination. Now, Catholic Charities, the church's social services arm, is one of dozens of nonprofit organizations that partner with the city Catholic Charities serves 68,000 people in the city, including the one-third of Washington's homeless people who go to city-owned shelters managed by the church. City leaders said the church is not the dominant provider of any particular social service, but the church pointed out that it supplements funding for city programs with $10 million from its own coffers. Jane Belford, chancellor of the Washington Archdiocese, wrote, quote, "All of those services will be adversely impacted if the exemption language remains so narrow." The exemption language merely says you don't have to perform or make space available for same-sex weddings, but you have to obey the law. Us? In separate interviews Wednesday, yesterday, Councilmember Mary Che referred to the church as somewhat childish. Another council member, David Catania, said he would rather end the city's relationship with the church than give in to its demands. Catania said they don't represent, in my mind, an indispensable component of our social services infrastructure. Now, the standoff appears to be among the harshest between a government and a faith-based group over the rights of same-sex couples. What is appalling to me, Truth Seekers, is that a religious institution, probably the most powerful one in the history of religious craziness, feels so threatened because people of the same gender want to get married, not in their church, but, you know, by the city, and have the marriage recognized as a matter of law, like any other couple. Like heterosexual couples, like interracial couples, like couples where the man may be in his 70s and the woman in her 20s, or in a very unusual reversal, the woman in her 70s and the man in his 20s, you know, that kind of stuff, but not the queers. What is so threatening, Catholic Church? What is so threatening? You harbor child molesters. You move them around like pieces on a chessboard with your knights and your rooks and your bishops and your all that stuff, right? But two adults who want to get married, you're going to blackmail the city of Washington, D.C. We will take our crucifixes and our rosaries and go home! Really? Peter Rosenstein, I think he's Jewish, of the Campaign for All D.C. Families, accused the church of trying to, quote, blackmail the city. Rosenstein said, quote, "The issue here is they are using public money, and to allow people to discriminate with public money is unacceptable," end quote. And back to Mr. Catania, who is the on the city council, he said he's been the biggest supporter of Catholic Charities. He said he's baffled by the church's stance. From 2006 through 2008, Catholic Charities received about $8.2 million in city contracts, as well as several hundred thousand dollars worth this year through his committee. But the Catholic Church has decided that if the city of Washington, D.C. says, hey, we'll recognize same-sex marriages, the Catholic Church is going to withdraw. You know, no pun intended, but that might be a blessing. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. And if you're just joining us, man, you really, really missed a good first 2 hours. But you can catch it on the go-around, or you can become a podcast subscriber and listen to this program anytime you like. Go to MikeMolloy.com, and the information is there. Before we leave the threats by the Catholic Church against the city of Washington, D.C., the threats of just unbridled blackmail. You let those queers marry and we're taking all our money away. Oh, not our money. Well, our money and our Catholic charities, everything. We're out of here. People can piss off. Christian? Jesus? Nah, not us. We're Catholics. Captain Mary sent this to me. You're familiar with the five boroughs of New York, of course, Staten Island and Brooklyn, Manhattan, Bronx, and Queens. There was an old bishop of Queens whose mind dwelt on heavenly things, but his only desire was a boy in the choir with buttocks like jello on springs. Captain Mary in Memphis, who sends me some of the damnedest stuff. All right, the phone number here is 877-996-2556, if you'd like to join in. I got this yesterday from Sharon, our military affairs correspondent, and we just ran out of time. And I want to share it with you. She writes, Mike, I'm watching the memorial service for the victims at Fort Hood on television, and I realize that I'm very, very angry. I'm not just angry, I'm furious, like I'm going to explode. I'm not sure why. They showed the arrival of the families of the soldiers killed. Then the wounded soldiers, the ones who could get out of a hospital bed, filed in. There were several soldiers trying to get down the stairs with crutches. Some are helped into wheelchairs at the bottom of the stairs. Apparently, President and Mrs. Obama met with the families and the wounded before the service. There was actually a little cheering when President and Mrs. Obama walked down the stairs to their seats. During the service, General George Casey Jr., Army Chief of Staff, speaks. He knows a little bit about military funerals and memorial services. Major General George Casey Sr. was one of the highest-ranking military officers killed in Vietnam, where he commanded the 1st Cavalry Division. When Obama walked up to the podium, there was more cheering, which he appropriately did not acknowledge. He spoke about each of the dead soldiers. He provided very specific details about each victim. It made me feel like I knew these people personally. I went from feeling angry to feeling incredibly sad. One of the dead was pregnant with her first child. Another victim was a grandmother. Those killed last week had a total of 19 children. Two of the men looked like they should have been sitting on a porch somewhere rocking their grandchildren. Afterwards, the president stopped at the memorial for each soldier. By memorial, I mean the traditional empty combat boots with upside-down rifle and combat helmet with a photo of the soldier. I noticed that at each stop, he laid something next to the soldier's photo. Someone on MSNBC said that they were Commander-in-Chief coins. After the Obamas, the families filed past the memorials. Some family members were crying and could barely remain upright. Soldiers rushed to help them. I noticed one soldier who walked up to each memorial and saluted. It was so sad. Once again, the Army will probably get to investigate itself on the shooting. The powers that be will cover up the disgusting way we treat our military personnel. They will continue to hide the damage done to our soldiers and their families over the past 8 years. Sharon Gordy. Yeah, I can't watch memorial services for people who have been killed in a contrived battlefield, whether that battlefield is in Afghanistan or Texas. I can't. I can't do it. Because the horrible truth is, if there's one thing the military does perfectly, it's funerals. And I don't mean that as a slam or a slur. I mean it as a compliment. They really do. And they do it so perfectly, with so much emotion, that is kept packaged. And again, that's not a slur. I mean packaged up, hidden, controlled. That I, the witness, when I'm watching this, I can't contain it. I will watch the arrival of coffins coming from Iraq or Afghanistan or decades ago Vietnam, and I will sit there, if it's on television, and watch it, and I will cry. I will just sit there and weep, because I know that in those coffins, under those flags, are people whose lives were ended because they thought they were defending freedom, justice, honor, when in fact they died because some filthy son of a bitch, or a series of filthy sons of bitches, in the Pentagon or in corporate America or in the halls of Congress or in the president's office or someplace, decided to send our soldiers to die or to kill for nothing. Nothing. And I guess the only thing that the families of the dead who are aware of that horrible nothing, the only consolation is that they believed that what they were doing was proper and in service to the country. And this is the part that just sometimes makes me, this is part of, like Sharon, you know, you feel angry and then sad. Because she knows, and I know, and you know, that these soldiers are being sent to places that we have no business being. And that if Obama doesn't end this madness in Afghanistan, there are going to be more and more and more. We've done this, son of a bitch, we've done this so many times since 1945. Sent our people into combat with no support from the American public. We don't want war. We don't want to send our people into these hell holes. What is the point? What is the point in sending our young and not so young people into a country whose tribal laws have not changed in 2,000 years, who have defeated every single invader and will defeat us? And to what end? What is the point? The invasion of Afghanistan was planned long before the events of September 11th, 2001. We all know this now, just like the invasion of Iraq was planned long before Iraq did anything or even thought about doing anything as if it could to us. So why are we there? And every time I see one of those flag enshrouded coffins come off of C-130 at, is it Dover? Dover, Delaware? Dover Air Force Base? It's just, to me, as somebody watching television, for Christ's sake, it's unbearable. And when you see the families that of some of the funerals, see a young woman, 30, 40, and her son or daughter, and they hand her the tri-cornered folded flag, and she sits there and weeps.
We will pray, we will stay while
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. As promised, phone calls. Tim is in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you. Hi.
Actually, that's Sam.
Sam?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Well, I was listening to you talking about why Catholics continue to follow the Church, and it's been a personal kind of struggle with me throughout my life. I've had periods in which I was very, very fond of the Church and distanced myself away based on what it did.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of wondered what kept people in it. And, that's a big answer, as big as however many Catholics there are on the planet. But for me, it was the idea that the Catholic Church is a very intellectual faith. It just has this towering intellectual tradition with it. And it's all about, justice and being nice to people and elevating everyone around you. And it informs that certain sort of Catholic evangelism, which is not stand on a street corner and threaten people, but do good things to people and let that be an example to others. And they find out that you're Catholic and they go, well, this has something to it. But for me, it was always kind of a refuge, because I'm not blind. I knew just like everybody else that the Catholic Church was a big organization and it was actually not doing good things. It was, harming people, just like you were saying, especially now what they're threatening to do in Washington, which I honestly think is unconscionable and certainly does betray one of the lessons that, as I understand it, that Jesus taught, that, whatever you do to the least of me, you also do to me.
Right.
But apparently it's okay as long as we're making gay people's lives miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that I'm, with them anymore. I'm apostate in a major way, and every time they come out like with something like this, the distance just gets farther and farther apart, and I really can't say that I support the Catholic Church anymore at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I still consider myself at my heart a Catholic, I don't think that'll ever leave me, but it's the part of the Catholic Church that should be inspiring the Church not to do what they're doing with kids, not to do what they're doing with gay people. I think really they've learned a lesson from American evangelicals, which is if you want the world to run a certain way, bully people around until they obey you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of us Catholics, both pious and disaffected, and that one's kind of my answer right there. You just find a way to make it all make sense until you can't make it make sense anymore.
Right.
And then you just kind of, you're kind of on your own, really.
Well, that comes through loud and clear, Sam, and I appreciate what you had to say. My contempt, there's no point in mincing words. My contempt for religion is that it always is blackmail. I mean, from the first time you're exposed to religion, the element of blackmail is there. And it's very simply, if you don't believe the way we tell you, your immortal soul will be condemned to the worst kind of suffering and pain, so bad you can't even imagine it. So the choice is yours. That's a choice. And I think certainly a lot of people say, well, Judaism doesn't do that. Well, Judaism doesn't have a hell per se, as the other two peoples of the book do. But the hell of Judaism is to be denied for all eternity the presence of God. So same thing, in a sense. Although the Christian hell is eternal mortification of the flesh. I mean, look at some of the paintings by Hieronymus Bosch. if you want to know what the Christian concept of hell is. So, to me, every single aspect of religion is based in blackmail. I don't care what the religion is. Somebody might say, well, that's not true with Buddhism. I'm not sure that Buddhism is a religion. Well, okay, don't send me all kinds of links now explaining what a religion is. I don't think Scientology is a religion either, but it just goes on and on, and I can't. Well, I understand that some people may get a modicum of comfort with the workings of a structured, organized religion. I challenge anyone to show me a religion whose history is not based in murder, death, fear, blackmail, contempt, and a disrespect for life.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Take a long walk to a company town. On what used to be solid ground.
26 before the hour.
Nobody was ever gonna get
solid. Rick is in Fargo, North Dakota. Hey, Rick.
Mike?
Yes, hi.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. It's a lot to digest, but thank you for doing it.
Sure.
I just don't understand. They want us to compete with countries that get paid very little, but they won't give us health care. How do we pay for our health care when they don't want to pay us a living wage?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I paid out more in 1 year in health care than my son makes a year. And he has no health care. I mean, how can you afford it when you don't want to pay? You know, they expect for you to work for very little.
Mm-hmm.
It just, to me, it just don't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. I do believe that the idea of Medicare for everybody in this country would have been the way to go. Medicare recipients pay a monthly charge. I don't know. I guess it's around $100 to $110 a month now. When you're a working person, you contribute to the Medicare fund. It's deducted from, you know, your wages if you're working for payroll wages. And I think everybody in this country would be happy to contribute a certain amount of our income towards Medicare for everybody if we knew that if we wanted to sign up, it was only going to cost us maybe, $125, $150 a month. What is that, $1,800 a year? There are people in this country who would kill for that kind of if it were as thorough as Medicare. And even Medicare is not completely there. Medicare, you still have to come up with the other 20%. You still have to pay a premium. I don't think there are any deductions. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. And the prescription drug plan under Medicare is lousy, thanks to George Bush and the pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, there's ways to go even with Medicare, but that was the start in the right direction when it was signed into law 40 years ago, 50, what was it? 40, yeah, 45, 45 years ago. It's a start in the right direction. And I don't know why, the Obama administration is jerking everybody around with these plans that don't make any sense. I'm not going to align myself with the right wingers who say they don't make any sense because those bastards are crazy. I understand how Chuck Norris is out there saying, well, if this health insurance comes through, eventually they'll be able to come into your home and tell you how you can raise your children. You know, there are crazy people out there who are polluting, all of this. Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and now Chuck Norris. I just wish these people would go the hell away and shut up. And let rational human beings try to work this out. But I hear you. I think what is going to come out of Congress is rotten. It's just rotten. So.
Yeah, my grandson had a brain tumor and, he's on Medicaid now. It's been 3 years. They did save him, but my son had to lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
Quit a $15 an hour job to take a lower wages because he had to qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
And you only can have $2,000 in your checking savings in retirement. And, because it's about $75 a year for his rehabilitation. So, I mean, you got to lose everything and then you can go on the government dole.
Right.
You know, but, so it's like, I don't, you know, everybody's so vulnerable. I don't get it. I just, there's so many people who are against it.
Yeah. I
mean, I'm a truck driver, and I go in a truck stop and talk to people. I had a friend who had a triple bypass, had no insurance, and he's against the government help.
Yeah.
Or national help.
I don't get it. I don't get it either, Rick. I just don't understand it. I swear to God, I don't. Hey, listen, thanks, man.
Okay, thank you.
Drive safe. I appreciate you checking in. I had a brother, my youngest brother, the youngest kid in our family. He's dead now. He died... has it been 17 years, Kathy? I guess it has been. He was a cartoonist, a cartoonist. He had several strips that he was working on. His work was published in Saturday Evening Post, Good Housekeeping. He did a weekly feature for the Toledo Blade newspaper. He was barely getting by, but he was working on the IFCOM. You know, he was very good. A good cartoonist. Had a lot of funny stuff going on. A lot of strips that were in the works. United Press, one of the syndicates had expressed a lot of interest in him. And then he developed colon cancer. And a little bit of insurance that he had, because his wife worked, when she got laid off, the insurance stopped. And in order for Danny, my brother, to apply for Medicaid, or to be eligible, I should say, for Medicaid, the little jobs that he had been using to support himself with, you know, if you're an artist, you pick up stuff here and there, you do the best you can, but all that had to stop so he could get on Medicaid. And, which is what he did. Well, my dead brother Danny, who died of metastasized colon cancer, is really a cancer survivor, because he lived 6 years, and I believe the cutoff point is five. But by the time the cancer had come back, after he'd had surgery, after he'd had radiation, after he'd had chemo, and I used to go with him to some of his chemo treatments, after all of that ended, of course, the cancer came back and eventually killed him, and it was pretty painful to witness, hideously painful to experience, I'm sure. But I can remember my brother understanding full well that because he had to be on Medicaid, that his treatment was going to be crappy. Yeah, he could go to the infusion centers and have this poison dripped into his arm. He went to an experimental program at Ohio State University, hoping against hope. Didn't work there. All he did was throw up for 2 weeks. And Medicaid doesn't have to be that way. If it wasn't the stepchild of Medicare, but as our caller said, was that Sam? Yeah. With his grandson dealing with something and his son having to go on Medicaid. I know what you mean, man. I know what you mean. I understand that. And the people who do desperately need health insurance. And the last resort is Medicaid. But you don't get to Medicaid until you are just goddamn stripped of everything that you have. Everything. And then you become what is essentially a charity case. I don't know. I can't believe that I live in a country like the great, by God, United States of America. And we have to talk about this. It's just astonishing. And we have these sick sons of bitches out there like Chuck Norris and Michelle Bachmann and Stupak and the rest of these crazy bastards who are doing anything they can to prevent Americans from having national health care. Why? What the hell is eating their brains? What is wrong with these people? You dirty bastards, every one of you. The members of Congress who refuse to support this, I'll tell you what, you predatory sons of bitches, let's take away what you got when you got elected. Take that away from you and deny you a chance to buy health insurance. And let's see how you squeal and squirm when all of a sudden you've got lumps in your colon, or when all of a sudden there's a dark spot on the brain scan in your head, or when you find out that your son or your daughter, your grandbaby, all of a sudden needs massively expensive surgery just to stay alive. These rat bastards don't have a clue as to what goes on in the real world. They really don't, do they? I get so angry about this stuff. We can find $1 trillion to spend on bombs and bullets and death and destruction and fire and pain and suffering. But if you listen to these filthy-ass Republicans and more than necessary number of filthy-ass Democrats, they don't care. They couldn't care less about that. As far as Americans getting health insurance, well, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. God damn. What do you want? Socialize? Hell no, we ain't going there. Uh-uh. But we'll have socialized war. Stupak doesn't want any kind of abortion. I'll tell you what. Just like the American Friends Service Committee, like the Quakers, I would like to be able to deny this putrid-ass government that part of my income tax that goes to build 4,000-pound bunker buster bombs, too, that kill children and rupture the eardrums of old people. Do I have a choice of doing that? No. If I don't pay, I go to prison, right, you bastards? Before the hour, thanks to our crew, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and of course, our executive producer, Kathy Bay. Nora is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I heard a caller today call in about a solution for the Catholic Church is to tell them they must pay taxes, no more tax, what do you call it, exemption for them if they want to butt into any legal governmental laws.
Well, I don't understand. I realize that in extreme situations, the power to tax is also the power to destroy. But even given that trite little slogan there, why is the church, any church, why is it exempt from property taxes. Why are the people who preach the sermons, I believe they're exempt from income tax, I think. I mean, I don't know, maybe they're not. But why is the Catholic Church the largest, isn't it, religious organization on earth? Why are these institutions exempt from taxes? Now, I'm not talking about the historical reason. I understand all that. But here we are in almost the year 2010. The church has been and continues to be this enormous force for negativity on this planet. I've said it a million times. I defy somebody to show me where there is a global force that is more destructive than organized religion. I can't think of one. So I just don't get why.
I saw some great messages on the TV machine today that said, a message to religion. You want to do it
now? Up. Wait a second. Listen, something's beeping bad here, Nora. I'm going to have to move on. I apologize. It's just something with your phone call that was going, you know, doing that. Sorry, Nora. Nan is in St. Louis. Hey, Nan.
Okay, I hope that sound wasn't coming from me.
No.
you know that room that they take Barack into?
Yeah, and show him the Zapruder film?
I think they took Christopher Dodd in there. They took Reed in there. But the most, at first I thought, okay, what's the deal?
Yeah.
Who is it? I thought, okay, aliens. And then the next time when Reed came out and said that they were completely redoing the health bill and had 1,000 new amendments. Can you believe that? To the health bill. And have you seen the paper that lists how much your subsidy is going to be?
Which?
You know, the subsidy that they're going to give you to buy your Enslavement Act for the insurance industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have.
Well, I can't remember now who it was, but anyhow, I figured out mine, and mine would be, they would pay 97% of my premium. Now, that can't be right.
Well, if I'm not sure in your particular case, and I'm not sure how it would work, but why can't that be right? I mean,
that's like better than single payer.
Well, if you get right down to it, single payer is there's no charge. I mean, we pay for it out of our taxes. There is no in the moment charge. Single payer is paid for in income tax. I mean, that's where the money, all social services that come from the federal government are paid from income tax.
Right.
Or federal excise tax or whatever, you know, however it's defined. So if.
Okay. But, all right. Well, I can't search that one yet to see if that's really that. But did you see anything about the climate bill?
No.
No, that was the crazy one because they brought in, they had the three top Democrats and somebody from the CBO and, I don't know, somebody from Brookings. Anyhow, they are going to make them have Bill Clinton and George Bush, one, be part of the advisory board because they said they cannot come together and do a bill, and they're going to make them listen to them.
Just one more example, I think, Nan, of madness. That's all I can come up with. Thanks, Nan. I appreciate you checking in. Debbie is driving in Virginia. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanted to commend you on the things that you do. You know, my husband and I, we listen to you through a lot of long and lonely nights on the stretch of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate you speaking truth to power. And as far as the congressmen and the Senate, I think we have a moral deficit in this country. It's not their brains, it's their hearts.
Yeah,
They don't care. You know, what we spend in a day or a month or a year overseas fighting people who we have no business fighting, killing innocent women and children with the bunker-busting bomb, everybody could have free health care.
Yeah, really. Sure.
Yeah, I mean,
And you know what else? We Americans would not... either consciously or unconsciously, feel so damn guilty because we are causing so much death and destruction. You know, the right-wingers say, well, you know, it's freedom. No, it's not. It has nothing to do with freedom. It has to do with stealing from other people, stealing their resources, stealing their labor, stealing their, you know, and I'm so sick of it, Debbie, I could just scream. You know, that's probably why I scream on this program. Debbie, I got to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you. Thank you. Take care. Drive safely, Debbie. We having more audio problems here, Madam Producer? Damn. God, I wish we had money to build a real studio. Wouldn't that be something? You know, if we had 5,000 people sign up for the podcast, we could do that. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seeker. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.